You gotta understand something here. This music is the glue of the world. It holds it all together. Without this, life would be meaningless.
What are you getting so crazy about? It's just music.
Whether or not you love California as much as Best Coast, this new indie band should be on your radar. I'm Jim DeRogatis of Vocalo.org.
And I'm Greg Cott of the Chicago Tribune. Jim and I will talk with the members of Best Coast and hear them perform live in the studio. Plus, we review new albums by art pop icon Brian Ferry and hip-hop innovator Kid Cudi. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions.
From WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX, you're listening to Sound Opinions, and time now for some music news. Do you remember we were sitting there by the water? You put your arm around me for the first time. You made a rebel of a careless man's careful daughter. You are the best thing that's ever been mine.
Big news in the music world this week is from Taylor Swift, who is singing that song, Mine. That's one of the singles off her latest album, Speak Now. Jim, we've been talking for years about how record sales are in the tank, but Taylor Swift is running against that trend. First week sales of over 1 million copies of Speak Now, which is extraordinary at this time. That is the biggest sales week in the record industry since 2005, when 50 Cent's The Massacre bowed at number one. She's bucking a lot of trends here. This is only the 16th album in the SoundScan era, which began in the early 90s, to sell over 1 million copies. Most of those million-selling debuts were in the 90s. In the 2000s, the record sales went down because of internet downloading. But Taylor Swift is selling to a very dedicated audience. Teenage girls, adolescents, and now their moms as well are buying these records. She's nearly doubled the sales in her first week of this record as compared to Fearless in 2008. What's the difference? I think there's a couple of factors here. She's had numerous television appearances since then. She's toured extensively. She had that infamous moment when Kanye West bum-rushed her appearance at the MTV Music Awards, put her on the map for a whole new segment of listeners. So as a result, we have one of the best-selling albums of the last 20 years at a most improbable time.
Greg, that is a most unique cover of the Motown classic, Heard It Through the Grapevine, as delivered by the punk-era English group, The Slits. We were wrapped up with the Halloween spirit last week. We did not get a chance to mark the passing of one of the most important musicians of that whole punk explosion in London. Arianna Forster, otherwise known as Ari Up, one of the founders of one of the rare all-female bands in all of punk in the 70s, The Slits, died after a long battle with cancer. Her death was announced by her stepfather, John Lydon, of the Sex Pistols. They were contemporaries, The Slits and the Sex Pistols, although Ari Up was a mere 14 years old in 1976 when she put this band together with a couple of other really remarkable women, Viv Albertine and a drummer named Palmolive. Palmolive objected to the infamous cover art of The Slits' 1979 debut album, Cut. The three women are wearing nothing but mud and loincloths. She left and formed another very influential female band called The Raincoats. These two bands were huge in influencing the alternative rock movement, the indie rock movement of the late 70s and the 80s into the 90s. They were favorites of Kurt Cobain. They were proto-Riot Girl, female empowerment, attitude, broke a lot of ground. And not just for being women. The Slits in particular, I think, were one of the most effective examples of bringing in dub reggae, a worship Lee Scratch Perry, and punk. It was primitive, the sound, but it was also very sophisticated in the use of echoes and atmosphere. So raw punk banging, but this otherworldly vibe you got from their records. Slits continued through several fine albums after Cut. Ari Up continued with a solo career, though there were long stretches where she just concentrated on living with her family in interesting places. Indonesia, Belize, her beloved Jamaica, where reggae came from. Towards the end of her life, she put the Slits back together. They did some reunion shows. She was still moving forward when cancer claimed her at age 48. Here, in tribute to Ari Up, is a song called Typical Girls from the Slits' debut album, Cut. They were anything but typical girls. But here's the tune on Sound Opinions.
That's the Slits with Typical Girls on Sound Opinions in tribute to Ari Up, dead at the age of 48.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and that is Boyfriend, the hit song by our guests this week, Best Coast. The California Trio, named for that region that they love, is made up of lead singer Bethany Cosentino, guitarist Bob Bruno, and drummer Allie Kohler. Their record, which features this wonderful, throwback, summery 60s sound, came out this year and was a surprise hit, Greg, entering the Billboard Top 40, really rare for indie rock. On the heels of that success, they launched a tour earlier this year, and they stopped by our Jim and Kay Maybe studio in Chicago. I started the conversation by asking Bethany how she got started in music.
I've been playing music for a really long time, basically since I was a kid. I was raised in a musical environment. My dad's a musician, but I was living in New York for about 9 months going to school, and I just really did not like it and took a break from music while I was living there and moved back to California and just started this band very, very quickly and just asked Bob to do it with me, and we've basically been doing it since. And then we met Allie along the way and kind of asked her to start touring with us. So it's all happened kind of within the last year and some change. But yeah, just fun, pop, simple music that is enjoyable to kids and adults.
Well, Bethany, your dad, you sort of skimmed over that a little bit, but obviously a serious musician. I mean, this guy played with War, right? One of the great bands of the 70s.
Yeah.
So did he give you any advice about whether or not you wanted to do this for a living? Was he that doting parent that said, you know, honey, you really ought to get yourself a degree or something like that and do something?
No, he was actually the opposite. Like when I said that I wanted to go to college, he was like, you should just play music. You don't need to go to college. And I was like, no, I want to go. And then, of course, I dropped out. And he was like, yeah, I told you not to go there in the first place. But my dad and my mom as well have always been very supportive of me as far as any kind of artistic endeavor that I do. They've always kind of been like, cool, you want to do that, we'll take you to the lesson or we'll take you to the audition or whatever. And, you know, my dad, I think, is more excited about Best Coast than any of us are.
I started following you on Twitter, and you tweet and you blog, and it's been kind of great because I felt like I've been along with the band for the ride through this whole last year. The record came out in July, mm-hmm. right? You know, we've got to experience it along with you.
A lot of it comes from kind of being on tour and you're in a van or you're, you know, sitting around waiting for a show to start. And I go on my phone a lot, and Twitter applications kind of cause me to use Twitter too much. But yeah, I mean, I think it's fun that we can kind of have our fans along with us in a way. Mm-hmm. Everybody can kind of see what's going on, mostly what's going on with me, but I try to include what's going on with these two as often as I can.
As well as the cats.
Yeah, as well as the cats.
more about the cats later. We got to hit on the cats later. But why don't we play a song and introduce some music?
Okay.
What tune you want to give us?
What do you guys want to play first?
Crazy.
Crazy? Sure. All right, this is the title track from the record. All right, ready?
I can't do anything without you. Can't do anything with you. Drive me crazy, but I love you. You make me lazy, but I love you. Want to hit you, but then I kiss you. Want to kill you, but then I miss you. Drive me crazy, but I love you. You make me lazy, but I love you.
That's Crazy For You from Best Coast on Sound Opinions. Bethany Costantino, Bob Bruno, and Ellie Kohler. Great stuff, great sound, Bethany, but it took you a little while to get to that sound, that kind of sunny pop thing with somewhat introspective, maybe some might even say depressive lyrics occasionally, and that garage sound with the guitars and everything. Tell me how you got there. When did it sort of all come together and that's the sound that I want for me?
I mean, I've Like I said, I've been playing music for forever, but I've always really done different styles of music. You know, when I first started writing music, it was very singer-songwritery, inspired by a lot of folky stuff that I was listening to when I was a teenager. And then I was in a band that was a completely different direction of both my solo project and of Best Coast called Pocahontas. And Bob was in that band with me as well. And that's really how I met Bob and started working with him. But I don't know, when I lived in New York, I listened to a lot of 50s and 60s pop music. And it's music that I grew up listening to as well. And I was very homesick when I lived in New York. And the kind of music like Beach Boys and Beatles and stuff that Phil Spector did, because my parents listened to a lot of Phil Spector and like the Christmas record and stuff. I would listen to that music in New York and it would make me very nostalgic for home. And it put me back in this adolescent feeling of living in Los Angeles at home. And so I really decided that I wanted to make music that was loosely inspired by that or loosely based off of that kind of concept. And I just wrote an email to Bob and was like, hey, I'm going to move back to LA. I'm going to start this band. This is sort of my idea. Would you like to do this with me? And you say that I didn't even give you an option. I just told you have to do this.
Yeah, you're doing this, baby.
I mean, I write the songs on my own, but when I started writing the songs, you know, I had a very specific idea in mind of what I wanted the finished product to sound like. And Bob really helped with that. And I explained to Bob, you know, this is the idea. It's punky Beach Boys girl music or whatever. And Bob was like, okay, I can do that. And he kind of fills in the gaps of the stuff that I can't really produce. So
it sounded like homesickness really inspired some of this record, too. What was the initial idea of going out to New York and leaving California?
I've lived in Los Angeles my entire life, and I got really sick of it, as I think a lot of people do with their hometown. And, you know, I think everybody kind of needs to experience something different for a little bit. And I moved to New York to go to school, and I had this very romanticized idea of what New York would be like. And I was going to school for writing, and I wanted to be a writer, and I thought that I would be like Carrie Bradshaw from Sex and the City or something. And it was very cheesy. And I got there and realized that New York is a very, very, very difficult place. You have to work really, really hard. And it's a great city and I love visiting, but it was just really difficult for me to live there. And when winter came, I was just like, can't do this. Gotta kick rocks and get out of here. But it was definitely just a very kind of low point for me. But it really taught me to appreciate California and especially Los Angeles and just the things that I kind of took for granted on a daily basis.
So the bulk of this record was written there, would you say? Or
oh, yeah. Everything Best Coast was written in California. I didn't write any of the music while living in New York. The idea sprouted in New York, and it really didn't. I moved back to California and I was living at my mom's house before I got a place. And I think it was like the second day after I had moved home, I started writing, and a song called Sun Was High is the first song that I wrote. And that's the first song that I sent to Bob and was like, this is sort of the general idea. I just didn't really feel very creative or motivated in New York, at least music wise. I was there going to school for writing, so I was doing tons of writing, but it was funny because all of my projects and all of my assignments were about California, and all of my professors were very like East Coast, and they were like, you clearly miss this place. Maybe you should go back.
Coming up on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX, more with Bethany Costantino and Best Coast. And later on in the show, Jim and I will review the new album by Roxy Music singer Brian Ferry. Welcome back to Sound Opinions. That's the song Goodbye from our guest this week, Best Coast. Their album, Crazy For You, harkens back to that mid-60s California sound, very sunny sound with the Beach Boys and the Mamas and the Papas. The lead singer Bethany Costantino's lyrics, they're not all about sunshine and waves. There's a dark, introspective tone in her writing, and I asked Bethany why she gravitates toward that.
I remember my dad picking me up from school and having Pet Sounds on in the car, or the oldies radio station that plays stuff like Moms and the Papas and the Beach Boys and the Ronettes and all of that stuff. But for whatever reason, although I'm not a sad or lonely or depressed person, it's easier for me to kind of write songs around those sort of feelings. And all of the songs that for this record, you know, they're not all 100% factual. It's not all based on my life, but the emotions, at least when I was writing the songs, I was definitely, it was a very gray time in LA. It was like, I had just moved back. I didn't really know what I was doing. It was literally gray for like almost 2 weeks. And I just started writing all of these songs very quickly. And the kind of poppier aspect from it comes from being inspired or fueled by beautiful weather. But, you know, sometimes I do kind of get into that darker place and experiment more with the darker sounds or talking more about longing or whatever. So, yeah.
I think it's the contrast in the music that make it so effective. You know, we might have a dark lyric and this wonderful sunny melody. We have this really accomplished musicianship. You know, you guys can all play, and I think Bethany, rare in the indie rock world, like you can really sing in a way that Patsy Cline could sing or Nico Case. And yet we have this kind of lo-fi, grungy, indie rock aesthetic. It's those contrasts that make it so effective. So, Bob, I want to know from you, when these songs come from Bethany, what do you do? What's your input? Because obviously she values it, but we don't know the man behind the curtain, what he's adding.
Bethany will send me a song, and she'll do her vocal, her guitar, and sometimes like a melodic guitar idea. And then she'll tell me, just kind of refine this or kind of play pretty similar to this. And then sometimes she'll just leave space for me to do my own thing. And so usually I'll do the drum part first, like figure out what I'm going to play on the drums. And then after that, just either bass or guitar. And then we don't really talk about it until we get into the studio. Or we don't even talk about it. We just do it.
And
there's never been conflicts or anything. It just all kind of works out. I think that's why we're able to work so fast, is like I know what she likes and she knows what kind of choices I'm going to make, like, that applies to her songs.
But Pocahontas was such a different sound from what you're doing together now.
Well, yeah.
I mean, yeah, Pocahontas was really something, though, that, like, neither one of us really, like, listened to the style of music that we were playing. It was just, I don't know, it just kind of happened that way.
Yeah, I mean, Pocahontas is like, I enjoy that kind of music, and I still listen to that type of music, but it was a lot of people having input in that, and me just kind of trying to help the other people in that band sort of realize their ideas. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I would offer suggestions and do things, but in the end, it was always up to the other people, like what would make the cut in the song or whatever.
That's really how I knew that I wanted Bob to be in Best Coast, is because we would record music for Pocahontas, but then I would sit in the room alone with Bob and he would be like, okay, do some kind of like Kate Bush style vocal or like Mariah Carey style vocal. And we would just talk about like pop music. Mm-hmm. So when I wanted to start a very pop band, I was like, okay, he doesn't look like he's into pop, but he's really into pop. And, you know, he owns like every Beach Boys related item in the world. So I knew he was the right person to go to.
But again, getting back to that indie rock thing, I love the kind of shortcuts you guys are taking. Rather than three backing vocalists, Bethany, you have this wonderful little stomp box that gives you the reverb or chorus effect, kind of beefs up the harmony vocal choruses. Bob, you're playing guitar, but you're doing the bass lines and adding some second guitar in between.
Yeah, we're kind of a tight-knit group, so yeah. It's hard for us to let other people in. So we just try and figure out how much we can do by ourselves, like, and try and maximize our sound, but still keeping it as a trio.
Impressive stuff. Can we hear another song?
Yeah, sure.
What are you going to give us?
You want to do Summer Mood?
Sure.
Okay.
Summer Mood by Best Coast on Sound Opinions. Bethany, I talked about your blogging and your tweeting earlier. Your first incarnation, Bethany Shreya, was a lot about the end of a relationship. Mm-hmm. Pocahontas was deeper and darker and moody from the get-go. You know, a lot of these sunny melodies are married to fairly personal songs of romantic woe. You ever worry you're going to share too much?
I mean, I think I already have. I think it's too late to worry.
We passed that point?
I mean, honestly, like, I just write what comes out of me, and it just so happens that sometimes it's extremely personal and sometimes it's not real, but people think it's real. But honestly, I'm not very concerned about what people think about the lyrics or people that try to make like some kind of crazy meaning out of the lyrics. I say it all the time. It's not, I don't sit down and with a pen and paper and really think out like, okay, what am I going to talk about in this song? I really focus more on melody and like, okay, what are my vocals going to sound like? What kind of different things am I going to do melodically with vocals? And then I really just play and sing, and those are the lyrics. And then occasionally I'll go back and revise and be like, okay, I don't want that to be in there. I'll take that out, or I want to change this word or whatever. But again, it's really inspired by a lot of girl groups and stuff. And when you listen to their kind of lyrics, it's all about love and heartache. And there's some really deep personal stuff in some of those old songs. And you don't know that it's necessarily all true. And so for me, it's kind of just like people can take it for what it is. You know,
there's also that weird thing where the girl groups, the great girl groups of the 60s, the pre-Beatles era, you know, even while they're singing about, you know, being head over heels for the boy, there's a sense of power that comes mm-hmm. through that also says that boy better watch out if he does you wrong.
Yeah.
You know, you're pining a lot for the men in your life, but I never get the sense that you're a pushover.
No, I'm not a pushover at all.
Bob smiles. Bob smiles and looks at the floor.
Am I a pushover?
Not even close.
No.
You can't even be pushed, I think. You would just like, you would be
No, it's
immobile.
Funny because I did an interview with an Austrian radio station, and the guy interviewing me asked me, what does it feel like to be the anti-feminist? And I was like, oh, I don't think I'm an anti-feminist at all. I'm just, you know, there's obviously like, a lot of people could listen to Best Coast lyrics and think, oh, this girl is so lovesick and just really. But I think people just take it, you know, it's classic and it's simple. And it's really just the style that I wanted to go to, especially for this record and for the early stuff that we recorded. And, you know, we've only been a band for a little bit over a year. So as a songwriter for this band, I've grown a little bit since then, and I'm working on new stuff now. And it's not all about how much I want to be with so-and-so and how they don't want to be with me and all that stuff. But yeah, definitely not the anti-feminist, not a pushover. I say in a song, I want to kill you, but then I'd miss you. It's true. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that lack of filtering, though, I think is a really strong part of the music, that sort of emotional response. And I get the sense from, you know, just looking at your blog or Twitter entries that music has this incredible hold over you. And it's interesting because, as you said, you've been in this a long time. I mean, you're kind of like a teen. I guess you were being groomed at one point to do this sort of teen pop thing, I gather. And, you know, obviously a dad being in the business and stuff, like you're around showbiz.
Yeah.
One thing I sense with the people who have been around the business that long, sort of like right in the middle of it, they get burned out on it after a while. They stop creating. And it was just interesting. Just a few days ago, you had this blog entry, and you had the word God. And you had a picture of Stevie Nicks right next to it. And, but it was just like, I loved that sort of just very emotional response.
Yeah, I'm just very straightforward. And I say whatever I want to say. I say what I mean. The thing for me that I think saved me from getting burnt out is definitely taking a break and going to New York and kind of trying to explore this other side of myself. And I think music is always something I've been really passionate about. I think I just kind of needed to take a step back from it and really truly figure that out. And, you know, I didn't expect any of the stuff that's happened with West Coast to happen. And I think that it's a true testament that really shows that this is something I love doing, because I hate leaving home. I love watching TV. And those are two things that I have to, you know, I can't watch TV and I'm always away from home. And I hate that, but I love this so much that I live with it and I do it.
That's cool. And I want to follow up about Stevie Nicks' God, because I think you've talked about some of Fleetwood Mac's 70s work as being inspirational and not maybe the album that people think of.
Yeah, I mean, I love all Fleetwood Mac. I even love it before, you know, Stevie was in the band, when it was just kind of like a jammy jam band.
Yeah.
I love Mirage, and I love Tango in the Night, and Rumors is obviously an amazing record, as is Tusk. But I, again, my mom was a huge Stevie Nicks, Fleetwood Mac fan. So I was introduced to Stevie Nicks, I think, when I was like probably like 5 or 6. My mom like tried to dress like her, and she had like a T-shirt that she got at one of their concerts. And you have that the Penguin shirt, right?
No, I have a different, just a logo shirt.
I remember my mom had the penguin in the top hat shirt. Mm-hmm. Christine McVie as well, I love her. All of them, they're all amazing.
Well, what's interesting too about them, you know, Christine McVie and Stevie Nicks as women in rock bands, is that they were not the traditional rock chicks, you know, kind of being the sex. I mean, obviously they were perceived that way by some people, but they were writing serious songs. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was the songwriting that was first and foremost the key to those women in that band, as opposed to some kind of window dressing on top of this band.
Uh-huh.
So is that the response? Is that why Stevie Nicks equals God in your blog?
She equals God for a lot of reasons to me. Just watching her, like, she truly just, like, owns it. She just really is such an individual and, like, is so amazing. And she was a huge sex symbol. Like, she's hot. She still is hot. Yeah. But, you know, it wasn't all about it being two hot girls in a band. You know, it was more about just this amazing band that was making amazing music. And it just so happened that they had two, you know, attractive women that Stevie also is, like, my number one fashion icon. She dresses so incredible.
Yeah.
I wear lots of rings because I think that's something Stevie would do.
I thought it was just a matter of, like, putting on as many clothes as you can and then twirling.
Yeah, yeah.
Can we get another song?
Yeah. Boyfriend?
Sure.
Okay.
Boyfriend from Best Coast on Sound Opinions, Bethany Cosentino, Bob Bruno, and Ali Kohler.
Well, Best Coast, it's been an absolute treat having you into Sound Opinions. Thank you so much.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
You.
Comment on our conversation with the members of Best Coast or anything under the rock and roll sun, call 888-859-1800 and we'll put you on the air. Next up on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX, Jim and I are going to review new records by singer Brian Ferry and rapper Kid Cudi. Welcome back to Sound Opinions. That is a song from the new Bryan Ferry album, Olympia. It's called Song to the Siren by Tim Buckley, one of only two covers on this album, relatively rare for Ferry in recent years. When he's put out an album, inevitably it is filled with cover songs. He takes his time when he puts out an album of original songs, and this is his first album of mostly original material in nearly a decade. His 13th studio album overall as a solo artist, but Ferry perhaps best known as the co-founding member of one of the great art rock glam pop bands of the 70s, Roxy Music. It is no overstatement to say that they changed the face of rock and roll in the early 70s with their innovations on those early Roxy Music albums. Meanwhile, Ferry developed a solo career as well. He, the ultimate lounge crooner, if you will, trolling for love in all the wrong places. We're going to review Olympia in a second, but let's play a track from it first. It's called Heartache by Numbers from Bryan Ferry on Sound Opinions.
I can't stop from thinking that love makes no sense. I'm burned out from dreaming about nobody else. Midnight to daybreak, I can't believe the pain. The way you look, the way you talk, the way you walk away, oh, I can't take.
Heartache by Numbers by Bryan Ferry from his new solo album, his first with new songs since 2002's Frantic. Greg, part of the story you left out was that after those successful Roxy Music reunion tours of a few years back, Ferry apparently wanted to take the band back into the studio and do a new Roxy Music album, which would have been the first since Avalon. The sound here is very much like Avalon, and for all intents and purposes, he did put the band back together. You got guitarist Phil Manzanera, you even have keyboardist Brian Eno, I'm excused from dropping that name this time, along with some other legends of British rock, David Gilmour of Pink Floyd. Ferry's always been able to put out a few calls and get the creme de la creme of the British rock scene to come and play on his records. Why? Because he is such a wonderful stylist. Just to be in his presence is fun. He's not breaking any new ground here. At age 65, we can compare him to Neil Young, who, we just reviewed his latest album, is consistently reinventing himself, experimenting, failing, succeeding, always doing something different. Not Brian Ferry. In his solo career, and in the second half, I'd say, of Roxy Music, he's delivered one thing: laid-back disco, futuristic, suave, cabaret, crooning. It's a wonderful sound. But, you know, if you haven't liked Brian Ferry before, having Johnny Greenwood of Radiohead guest on this record, it's not going to make you run out and buy it. If you do love Ferry, well, you already own all these records, and you're going to buy this one.
Ferry is pretty consistent in his tone and texture, Jim. As he said, ever since Avalon, really, he's been making variations on that sound. I think, actually, this is one of the better Ferry solo albums, especially when it comes to original material. I think sometimes he tends to overdress these albums. They're so elegant, they sometimes lose the melodies. But I think the melodies are pretty sharp here. And again, there's no one who does better what he does. You know, it basically sounds like a party for one in a Weimar cabaret.
Yeah.
You know, he's a lonely guy, and at the same time, he's had some misadventures, and he's looking back at them with some rueful regrets. There's this luxurious sound, but underneath it all, there's that really vaguely disturbing undertow in all of these songs. And Ferry, as he's aged, seems to have never really lost that. I mean, he was making this sort of adult-sounding music back in the 70s, and now that he's well into his 60s, it suits him very well. You know, he doesn't look foolish or embarrassing when he does this sort of thing. And as I said, the melodies are back and forth. I'd say this is the best thing he's done as a solo artist of original material since that last Roxy Music album, Avalon, in 1983.
See, I always love his covers. I think I kind of prefer them, especially, Greg, when you consider it was only a couple of years ago he lost every cent he'd ever made.
Yeah.
He was in deep bankruptcy. And then this album was prompted in part by a near-death airplane incident with these dramatic things, but he still comes out and he doesn't have anything to sing about except like slinking through the lounge at 4 a.m. again.
He's still pretty darn suave. I'm going to give it a buy it all the way.
I'm not saying I'm not going to give it a buy it. I agree with you. It's just not a surprise.
She said I don't spend time like I really should. She said she don't know me anymore. She hates me deep down, I know she does. She wants to erase me. A couple days, no talking. I see my baby, and this is what she tells me. She said,
is Erase Me by Kid Cudi, the Brooklyn-based rapper, from his new album, his second, Man on the Moon, Volume 2, The Legend of Mr. Rager. Greg, this guy has come on strong in a very short time. Born Scott Ramon Seguro Mascuti in suburban Cleveland, relocated to Brooklyn, signed to the label of DJ A-Track, who is Kanye West's collaborator, former Chicagoan, all of a sudden, everybody wants a piece of this guy. He's on Kanye's 2008 album, 808s and Heartbreak, helping to write Heartless. He's on television. You might have seen him in that new Mark Wahlberg-produced HBO comedy, How to Make It in America. He's guesting on Jay-Z's The Blueprint 3. He's all over the place, for good reason. He's an innovator. We reviewed, when it came out, his first album, Man on the Moon, The End of the Day. Since then, he's been talking a lot about growing tired of the limitations of hip-hop, embracing rock and roll, saying he's been trying to learn how to play the electric guitar. He wants to toss things up. Now comes his second concept album. As I said, Man on the Moon, Volume 2, The Legend of Mr. Rager. Let's play a song from it, and we'll come back and grade it on our Buy It, Burn It, Trash It scale. This is one of the first singles. It's called Rev O Fev on Sound Opinions.
Let go, life does get tough. No need to stress, hold you back too much. Let's go, I heard they found a solution. Where will you be for the revolution? Get rough, no need to stress, keeps you down too much. Wake up, I heard they found a solution. Where will you be for the revolution? Ooh, 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 ooh.
so high up, so high up, and I like it. Hey, I am happy today. This man like other days. Somehow I feel okay. Somehow I feel okay. Whoa.
Revo Fev from Kid Cudi's new album, Man on the Moon 2, The Legend of Mr. Rager. Jim, absolutely right. This guy has made a huge impact in a short amount of time. He's one of Kanye West's proteges. Kanye started this mini movement in hip-hop with 808s and Heartbreak a couple of years ago. We're seeing elements of that in Drake's music, some of Lupe Fiasco's, and big time in Kid Cudi's two albums. Here we have a genre that is based on larger-than-life personality and swagger. Kid Cudi is hip-hop's great existentialist. He is about dropping out, the lonely night of the soul. The first album was very much about dropping out. It was done from the dark side of the moon. He was getting high and floating off into space and musing about his life and where he belonged in the world. On this record, he engages with that world. Now he's become somewhat famous. That last record went gold. He's toured around the country. He is a famous name. He's getting into this lifestyle that he thinks a hip-hop artist should be leading, and it's getting him into all sorts of trouble. Drug abuse, trouble with women. By the end of the album, he's dropping out again, this inward-looking album. He finally sees himself for what he is, and he says, I don't belong here. I don't belong in this world. I'm not sure where I belong. So it's an interesting narrative that's threading through this record. And at the same time, as you said, Jim, he's bringing in these outside influences. You know, there's a cool St. Vincent sample in here, yeah. You know, the indie rock artist. He's got cameos by CeeLo Green and Mary J. Blige to sing some hooks, but a lot more guitar-oriented in a lot of ways. Rock critics are going to love this album, no doubt about it. There's also a strong hip-hop element in the wordplay. I think Kid Cudi's made two great albums in a row. This is a buy-it all the way for me.
I couldn't agree more, Greg. Definitely a buy-it album. When he's singing about grappling with cocaine addiction, there's nothing glorifying about it. He is not boasting. He's not bragging. He's not saying this is the way you should behave in hip-hop. He's saying, I hate myself for having fallen prey to this. He questions everything that way, including his own appeal to the world, which is heavy-duty stuff in an art form where for the last 20-some years, we've had nothing but I am the greatest. Yeah. Look at me. Worship me. Coming on the heels of Drake and Kanye having started it, as you said, with 808s and Heartbreak, this is like hip-hop moving into its James Taylor period. And I mean that in all the best ways, not the weakness of James Taylor, but the honesty, the attempt to bare one's soul. So a double buy it to be certain. What do we have on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, we're the Rock Doctors. We're going to help out a music patient in need.
As always, Greg, we have some thank yous to say on the way out. Best Coast was recorded by Mary Gaffney and Brandon Jackson. And if we describe our team as Best Coasts, I would have to say intern Julia Mullen-Gordon is the West Coast. Jason Saldana, one of our producers, he's definitely East Coast. Robin Lynn, the other producer, she's kind of the Gulf Coast. And our fearless leader, our executive producer, Tori Southside Malatia, he's been coasting for a long time, period.
Yes.
I look at my telephone book, I look at my telephone book, I can't stand away. Look, I hate to think the way you took me down to a burning rage. I wrote your name on every page. You don't return my call.
On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So now it's time to hear what you have to say.
New messages.
Hi, Jim and Greg. This is John from Chicago. Just heard your Scary Sounds for Halloween show for 2010. I was also inspired by your show last week and your choice of a crossover artist, jazz, rock artist, Herbie Hancock, in your analog synthesizer show. And I'd like to recommend a crossover for next year's Halloween mixtape. This from crossover artist Bill Frisell, his 1991 album, Where in the World, the track Spell. It's a little bit different from some of the things you've been playing, and that is just four instrumental musicians, no vocals, but four musicians who can really play on electric guitar, bass, drums, and cello. listeners who think jazz, yuck, they're going to really like the way Bill Frisell shreds with his electric guitar. So, once again, great show this year, guys. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Hey, guys, this is Julia calling from Philadelphia. I listened to your Halloween special. It was great, and I had suggestions for you for creepy songs. One of them is a song by Shriekback, a band from the 80s called Nemesis. I never really knew what this song was about, but it always kind of reminded me of a kind of musical Island of Dr. Moreau. Pretty creepy. And the other one is called Chant of the Ever-Circling Skeletal Family, which, of course, is a David Bowie song off of Diamond Dogs, which is just sort of a creepy, hypnotic chant of people totally under the spell of a totalitarian government. And the last kind of few syllables of this song sort of segue into Bowie just yelling, run, run, run. Pretty scary. Anyway, thanks, guys. I love your show.
Hey, guys. Ted in Arlington, Texas, calling to comment on the Halloween show. I thought it was great. It's always one of my favorite shows each year. I just wanted to give you three songs that I think are great. And it's funny because they're not really particularly scary songs, but when I was a child growing up in the 90s, I used to sleep with a classic rock station on the radio. And there are three specific songs that to this day, when I hear the beginning of them, my reflex, it's an automatic reflex, just turn the volume down and wait until the terrifying part is over. One, obviously, Time by Pink Floyd. That alarm clock beginning in the middle of the night, you don't want to hear that. Fire on High by Electric Light Orchestra, with that creepy backwards voice and the Hallelujah chorus and everything. Terrifying when you're in third grade at 4 in the morning. But I think the one that usually used to scare me the most was the Soft Parade by the Doors. First time I heard it, I just bolted upright in bed, and I hear this voice screaming, "You cannot petition the Lord with prayer!
You cannot petition the Lord with prayer!"
I don't know what to think. I don't know who that is. I've never heard the song, but, yeah. Still to this day, pretty creepy stuff. Later!
Can you give me sanctuary?
No more messages.
To share your opinions on Sound Opinions, call 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.